Oh, my. Just didn't go back on. I hope on lunch break you had a chance to kind of bandy this about a little bit. I need two people to be police officers for me. You're gonna role play here, sir, and come on up. So, you're not going to use a weapon. Just want to say, ask me why I asked that. You've not been to a fun and exciting church meeting till somebody says, "Well, I got a 45." Well, hey, no. Okay, so these two have now been hired as police officers, and their mission is to enforce the law, protect the public, right? That's their job, and to go home safe. That's one of a police mission. So your training's now done. And so I'm going to give these guys a scenario. We're going to just do a quick role play, and then we're going to talk about what their mission really is and what we really need them to do as a community. So earlier I tapped two volunteers as role players, and if you guys will come up, I think you're, oh, you got that. So let me give you the dispatch. So when a police officer goes to a call, sometimes a police officer will see something happening, right? Like they're driving up the street and they see something. Sometimes on the radio it comes across, hey, you need to go to this house at 701 East Broadway. So I'm going to give you a police dispatch. So the dispatch that these two officers would get is at 701 East Broadway, which now we're going to turn this into a house, right? Brianna has invited her boyfriend back into the house. So here's what these officers would be told. There's a domestic disturbance at 701 East Broadway. There's a white female and a black male. They're arguing. During previous calls at this same address, the male assaulted the female on two prior calls. He violated an ex parte restraining order. And during one call, he was armed with a hammer. Today, when someone called 911, it's unknown who called 911, they said, "There's a weapon, get the cops here fast." So that's the call. That's all the information these two cops would have. So, Brianna, if you'll sit at your kitchen table over there. And, sir, if you'll stand here by your estranged girlfriend. Sorry things are going bad for you. Okay, so so now we're going to assume that our officers safely arrived and they've arrived. And now you two are cops on the scene. And go. What would you do? Right? We investigate. We ask.
Call?
Yes, I called.
Hi, what seems to be going on?
Well, I can't.
See your hands for a
second. I let him back in the house, and I can't believe he did this to me again.
Well, let's see.
Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Mike with the Columbia Police Department. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Can you tell me what happened?
This has been ongoing for so many years, and I let him back in my house, and I thought that things were going to be different this time. He told me they were going to be different, and they're not different.
They're not different. How long have you guys been together now?
14 years.
All right, let's pause right there. So now these two had a very extensive 17 seconds of police training, right, before I put them up here. During a police encounter, if an officer has a reasonable suspicion that a crime is occurring and that one subject may be armed, they can conduct what's called a Terry frisk. Now, that's different than a search. A Terry frisk is just to see if it's safe to stand and talk to someone. So, go ahead. We'll resume the...
We do, and that's why I thought if I brought him back in that this was the right thing to do, and he promised me that he was going to change, and he's not changing.
Have you guys thought about therapy yet?
We've tried. He's against it. He's totally against therapy, and I'm tired of him constantly causing me pain. I just really thought that this was going to be different.
A knife, hammer, anything?
No, because this is my husband. This is the man that I've spent all my time with, and he's told me it would change, and he's just not changing.
What's going on?
All right, let's pause right here. So, now remember, you guys are in the peanut gallery. Do either one of these officers have information that a crime could be in progress and that someone here could be armed? Okay, tell me more about that.
Mm-hmm. She keeps bringing her hands up and talking, and she's the one who's more animated.
Yes.
And I would worry about if she's had enough of him. And I'd like to make sure both of them are unarmed.
Okay.
I think her hands, yeah, I think her hands should be up so we can see her hands too. But she don't know what she can pull out. She's getting more agitated.
Okay. Good observations. Good observations. Okay. So you guys are all done. Let's give them a round of applause. So, just to back up a little bit on the Terry frisk and the dispatch, thank you, officer. Thank you, officer. You guys are now retired. There's donuts at the back. Remember, one of the things I gave on that dispatch was that somebody has a weapon. So it really did break that threshold of, can I, as a police officer, reasonably touch somebody? And I think your observations were right on. He stood up here like this, right? Yeah, and he didn't have his hands all the way in his pockets. He just kind of stood there, and she was more agitated. And how many times did her hands go out of sight? And I'm not picking on you or anything. Please forgive me. It's just that we have this bias that if there's going to be somebody dangerous at a police call, it's probably going to be the man. Now, if you go to Las Vegas and you play the odds on stuff, they would probably agree with that. But I don't know, a few years ago, two officers got shot, and the suspects ran into a Walmart, and the officer sees a guy that's acting weird and just, he looks agitated. You know, there's a word there that's ambiguous. And he walks right by this woman who's just standing very still. And he had had this class. He had the fair and impartial policing. And he said, my intent was to go straight towards this guy because he looked agitated. But because of the class, he thought, am I just assuming, am I immediately dismissing this woman as not dangerous? Well, turns out the woman was acting in concert with the man, and they had both had guns and shot at police officers. I think it was in Las Vegas. And so by getting rid of our bias, what I tell our officers is we're safer if we don't operate on that. Even just listening to this presentation, if you can listen with unbiased ears or if I can speak with unbiased speech, We can get further, closer to the facts. So that was our role play. And there's the key point. If we as the police go out and buy into stereotypes, we're not being safe. Just like the slower brother that I was talking about earlier. He could have stabbed me 7 times. Money Train, I'm not going to play this video because it never plays and I can't figure out why. That's my disclaimer. If you ever get a chance to watch that movie, there's a scene where Woody Harrelson, he's an undercover cop, and he's in a subway car, and he sees this white dude pickpocketing somebody. And so undercover officer Harrelson handcuffs the guy and looks really tough, and this elderly woman gets by and says, thank you, officer, for being so brave. And then you see the next scene, and Woody's like trying to buy something, and she took his wallet. I can't do it justice, but it's really insightful. So this afternoon, we're going to look at science. We're going to look at some strategies. If we police on stereotypes, it's ineffective. Okay, so who can throw me out some descriptions of homeless people? Like if you were going to describe a homeless people, what are some adjectives you would use? What's that?
They're not, they're grooming.
Okay. Ungroomed, I'm with you now.
Disheveled. Unclean.
Okay.
Mother with a child.
What's that?
Mother with a child.
Okay.
Shopping cart.
Shopping cart.
Dog.
Looking malnutrition.
Okay. Malnourished. Ah, man. All right. No more three-syllable words. That's not even three syllables. What else? How do they smell?
Cardboard box.
Living in a cardboard box? Living outside?
Smelly.
Somebody said smelly? Are they drunk, sober, or high?
One of those guys.
Who said drunk and high? Who said could be any of the above?
Could be all
the above.
Could be all the above. But most often, if I call you and say there's a homeless guy in your garage, what do you think he's going to be? Asleep and drunk. Okay. So I think I agree with those. You know, a lot of citizens, this is my least favorite police call. They'll call and say, it's 20 below zero back when we had winter. Remember that? A long time ago? Like 7 years ago. I don't know. They call and say, there's a homeless guy and it's zero. I need an officer to go by and check on him. And I always think in my brain, because the heater in your car doesn't work. But I have in my own brain a vision that homeless people sometimes smell like they haven't had a shower for a week. Right? And I've helped the homeless. I've given rides to them. Talked to them. I'm not a perfect police officer. I remember one time a store called about a homeless guy because he was begging for money on the parking lot. It was cold. And so I showed up, and I was busy that day. And so I said, hey, pal, you need to move along. They don't want you standing on their lot. You know, he was drunk. He had urinated on himself. He fit my personal bias of what I thought I would encounter. Just being honest here. And he said, well, I don't want to move on. It's getting cold out there. And I said, well, you know, you kind of chose this life, didn't you? Like, you don't want to live like a regular person. You want to own rules and live by where you want to be, and you don't want to have a job. I mean, you've chosen this life. I mean, I know lots of people who feel that way, and I felt that way that particular day. And so he stares at me for a second, and he said, you know, I didn't used to be homeless. I used to have a job, and my wife and kids were killed in a car crash. He said, you're right. I felt about this tall. And I only share this story with you because I've invited you all to look within yourselves. And I'm just telling you, I'm not a perfect person. But I felt that tall. You know, if my loved ones were injured or killed, you guys might be complaining on me, right? Our bias can get in the way of treating someone as a human being. We don't even realize it. So Susan Fiske did a study. Let's get to science. And they did an MRI of people's brains. And some of the pictures, so they put somebody in an MRI machine, you know, where it makes all the noise and whatever. And they would show them pictures of like a mailbox or a lampstand or a spare tire or a brick. And so one part of your brain, and I'm no brainologist, so walk with me on this. So one part of your brain would light up for an object. Does that make sense? Like if I show you a picture of a bucket, this part of your brain's going to light up. If you see someone who looks like you, let's say I show him a police officer, fit as a fiddle, in his prime. Oh, thank you. Your laughter means you agree. It's okay. So if you see someone that's in our we group that looks just like me, a different part of your brain lights up. So you guys with me on this? What she discovered was, if she showed them pictures of homeless people, and this is not just police they're showing this to, this is just university students. What part of your brain do you think lit up? A human being like me or an object? And I can prove that to you. I mean, there's video after video out there of like somebody having a heart attack in a busy area and people stepping over them to get to their cars. If you've ever shopped on Friday after Thanksgiving, right? There's people fighting to get a cart and they're smashing a fellow human being so they can get $20 off their whatever. because they objectified them because they're worried about the wrong thing. With bias, with homeless people, what happens is they become part of the landscape. Oh, here's a stoplight and stop sign. Oh, and there's a homeless guy wanting food. I'm important. I'm on the way to work. What an awful thought process. And I want you guys to know that I've changed, okay? I don't want you... We got some great resources for the homeless in this town, and we should. And we should all maybe dig a little deeper or look a little more at what we could do for people. It's unjust what I said to that man. I was wrong on that day. Since then, I've worked hard to help our homeless. Since I became aware that I was taking police action with this bias that people chose this lifestyle, it really changed my perception of them. Ed, what's up? So, I finally recognized my implicit bias, and I consciously choose to replace it. And this is how we alleviate these things. I consciously choose to replace it with objective, bias-free judgments. Now, I'm telling you, I've run into some homeless people who they didn't want to get a job and go to work or go to college or go to high school. They wanted to be drunk and high and live outside of normal society, and they're fascinating to talk to. And frankly, they're pretty cool dudes and dudettes. But I made a conscious decision. So scientific studies have been conducted on ethnicity, race, gender, sexual orientation, body shape, how people treat you, your age. Does anybody fall into any one of these categories? Right? That's why I say bias is a human problem. All of us. Doctors and nurses have exhibited bias. Lawyers, prosecutors, and judges. School teachers and police. There's bias exhibited in all these things. There's bias exhibited by waiters and waitresses. Again, put on your fanciest clothes and go to a restaurant. Oh, sit down right here, right? Dress like I usually dress. They'll be like, we have a seat by the kitchen, right? The science, the relevance to policing. There's a connection in our brains, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, with what movies tell us, what our own experience tells us, what our own worldview tells us. The Race Crime Association study. Now, stay with me. I know it's after lunch. If you get mad, take two breaths and then say it. But I'm with you guys. The Shove study. So here's what they did. They picked a white guy and a black guy, and they had them go to a mall. And so they videotaped them. They made this movie. And so for part of the study, the black guy would shove the white guy. Josh Carell did this. I think he's from Stanford. So they role-played this, but they made it look real. So you would see a black guy shove a white guy. And then the study people would watch it, whoever was assisting. Like if I showed each one of you this movie individually, you would say, how violent was that shove on a scale of 1 to 10? And the participants would rate it. Then they took a different group, and they had the same two role players, and they shoved them so they landed exactly the same way, except this time the white guy shoved the black guy. And then whoever watched the video, different group, said, rate this shove from 1 to 10. How violent was it? So just as an example, when the black guy did it, what do you think? It was rated between like a 7 and a 10. When the white guy did it, and they choreographed their steps, right? Like, you know, like the step would go back to here. When the white guy did it, it was rated as a 1 to 4 violence. You see the disparity there. And that's among white participants, black participants. There was in everyone's head this race. Black guy does it, it's horrible. White guy does it, it's bad but not horrible. And these are among good people. It's kind of a we group, they group thing. Josh Carell determined that when the white or when the black guy did it, it was perceived as more threatening. And this is true for both white people who watch these videos and black people. So sometimes we think if we can just fix those daggone racist white cops, policing will be fair and impartial. And I'll submit to you that the science is showing that all humans have bias. It's a human affliction. Here's another one. Now, does everybody remember Etch-a-Sketch? You know, where you turn the little knobs, you can draw a picture. Was anybody here really good at that? Good, good. I was lucky to draw a rectangle on my best day. But I spent hours and hours and hours doing it. I don't know what the Xbox version of that is. You know, how do you do that on a touchpad? I don't think you can. I'm sure that somebody's created an app. So psychological studies, if you've ever volunteered for one, you really don't know what they're studying. It'd be like you guys sitting through this class, and then we give you a calculus test or something like that. That's not what I thought I was here for, because they're tricking you. You got to watch them. So also, to study psychology, you have to have a weird last name, like Goff, Purdy, Davies. It gets better as we go through here, I promise. So one-third of the room would be shown. You'd come in for your psychological study participation. They'd say, okay, sit down and watch this screen. And so for 30 minutes, you would watch a series of images of black faces. You know, everybody from Barack Obama to the guy across the street, you know, just famous people, not famous people. Just for 30 minutes, different black faces would come on the screen. The other third of the room, you would watch 30 minutes of white faces, right? So it would be everybody from Hillary Clinton to the guy down the street, just different white faces for 30 minutes. And then the group in the middle of the room, you would sit down at your computer, and they'd say, now you have to sit here for 30 minutes. And it would be like wavy lines, like the computer's messed up. But because everybody gets all nerved up during psychological studies, you'd be like, I'm not getting them. They're seeing how quick I'll get frustrated. That's what this study is really about, right? So white faces, 30 minutes. Wavy lines for 30 minutes. Black faces for 30 minutes. You guys with me? Then what they would do is similar to Etch-a-Sketch. They'd start creating this picture of an object. If it was crime relevant, like a gun, a knife, or a police car, or handcuffs, or crime irrelevant, like a camera or a flower. So after you've sat there for 30 minutes, they're going to say, you press a button in this hand if it's crime relevant, and you touch this button over here if it's crime irrelevant. You guys with me? All right. So here's frame one. That's 25 lines later, 41 lines later. Obviously, it's a gun. We would click crime relevant, excuse me, knife. And then there's the neutral objects they picked. Like either any of the groups could get any one of these pictures. So what Jennifer Eberhardt, or no, this is not Jennifer Eberhardt's study. What they decided was if in all of us there's this black equals crime association in our brains, implicit bias, under the radar, people that say I'm colorblind or people that say I'm not biased or racist, right? People of all races. But if somehow through all of our experience, history, TV, movies, whatever, there's a black equals crime association, that it would show up. And people who had watched black faces would be quicker to click the crime relevant than people that watch white faces. Does that make sense? Now remember I said that biased policing's unsafe, unfair, and unjust. So part of this, police officers, is if you're operating under bias and stereotypes, if you're going out in our community and you're policing based on stereotypes and bias, let's see what the scientific research says will happen. So the control group was the people that watch wavy lines, right? You guys get that? So they had really no bias there. For a crime-relevant object like a gun, I'm sorry, crime irrelevant, like a flower or a camera, it took them about, 24 frames to say, okay, that's a flower, not a gun. It has nothing to do with a crime. The folks who watched black faces for 30 minutes took them a little bit less to say that's an irrelevant crime object. It has nothing to, or Yeah, has nothing to do with crime. The folks who watched white objects took 24 frames. Statistically, those were all pretty close, 22, 23, 24. Everybody see that? I mean, it's a very small difference in, okay, it's a flower, however many frames it took. I promise we're going somewhere. It's a long walk for a little drink of water. So the control group that watched wavy lines for a crime-relevant object took them about the same amount. And that kind of shows that watching wavy lines just kind of makes your brain neutral. Do you guys with me? They're in neutral there. Watch what happens to the folks who watched black faces. They decided something had something to do with a crime in less than 15 frames. So the folks who watched the black faces for 30 minutes are going, boom, that's a gun. That's a knife. Because their bias enabled them or made them say that's crime relevant. When you look at crime, or the people who watch white faces, it took them almost 28 frames to decide, oh, that's a gun. Now, do you see how that goes to officer safety? Kind of like our role play up here. And somebody said it. Well, they let the woman put her hands below the desk like four times. But this officer did a good thing, saying, hey, can you just take your hands out of your pockets? But our other officer, no offense, never said, hey, keep your hands up where I can see them. That was sexual there, right? Sexual bias. Hey, come on now. You guys already shut me down for lunch. Don't get two swipes at me. I know. But look at the officer safety issue there. And here's what I challenge my police officers with. And this is outside the curriculum. But I want you guys to leave here as partners with me or me with you in making our community safer. The FBI has collected data for 30 years on who kills cops. 30 years worth. And so they've come up with a profile. It's the law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty study. LEOKA.com. LEOKA.com. So for 30 years, they've compiled this. What race do you think for 30 years has been a cop killer? The most, when I say it's not the only cop killer, it's the one most statistically likely to kill a cop. White, okay. Male or female?
Male.
How tall? 30 years for the date. That's right, 5'9". Who said that? You know what I mean. How much do they weigh? 172, that's right. Wow, you guys must have looked this site already. Do they come from lower income, middle income, or higher income families? If you had to pick one.
Middle.
Lower.
You all got it right. Middle. Now here's what I challenge my officers with. Here's what I want to invite you guys to be brave and courageous, the same as I challenge our officers. Remember I said that a Terry frisk means if an officer is going to a criminal investigation, they have a reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot. Now notice that doesn't say proof. It doesn't say an eyewitness. It doesn't say they're right. It says reasonable suspicion, which is a fancy schmancy legal term of it's likely. You with me? Like on TV, they say, we need proof beyond a reasonable doubt. This is not TV. This is our Constitution. Reasonable suspicion means it's likely. And just likely, not more than likely, it's likely. So a Terry frisk is, they have a reasonable suspicion that criminal activity afoot, and it's likely that one of the parties may be armed. It doesn't say gun, it says armed. So knife, stick, brick, whatever. Here's what I challenge our police officers. Of the last 100 people that you have Terry frisked, not arrested, not had a search warrant, not seen a gun like sticking out, right? But of the last 100 people you've Terry frisked, how many have fit that profile? And you know what I get is a lot of looks like, jeepers. Not very many, if any. So why am I sharing this with you? Because we got to make things better. Because it's unsafe for our cops to ignore data and to ignore 30 years worth of research. Now, you can't Terry frisk somebody and say, but 30 years worth of research says you're most likely. Okay? And so don't leave here thinking it's a math problem. But we have like 50,000 kids. Well, not that many. But we've got a bunch at the University of Missouri, Stevens College, and Columbia College that fit that profile, don't they? I can't get anywhere in this town because they're always stopped at a stop sign. No, I'm kidding. But here's the other side of that coin. I've lived here since 1991. I protect all people. My job is to make your kids have a safe environment or do whatever I can. Of the last 500 people shot in the city of Columbia, I'm not talking nationwide statistics, I'm talking since 1991, people shot in Columbia, Missouri. Who was the suspect? Who was the victim? And this is where we have to be courageous. So if a police officer says, I really haven't been frisking enough white guys between the ages of 18 and 22, I left that part out, I apologize. It's tempting to beat them about the head with that. If we look at occurrences in Columbia, Missouri, who did the victim say shot him and who shot him? Either. This is a national statistic. Okay? This is 30 years, United States of America. Sorry, I should have explained that better. 30 years, United States of America. But I'm talking about those of us who live in Columbia. You can't look at a cop and say, hey, instead of frisking me, I'm black, you need to go frisk some college kid. Because they probably might if they can articulate reasonable suspicion, they better. And if that guy's involved in a crime, they better. But we also can't say that, well, of the last 100 frisks, 85 of them were black guys, and that's racism, prima facie evidence of racism, because the other part of our mission is to keep people safe. There's a lady, and she's deceased now. She was a drug dealer, but she's kind of my favorite drug dealer. I won't say her name. But I'm just saying, well, she was always funny. So I'm walking up Garth Avenue at Oak Street one night, and she pulls over on the wrong side of the road, and she's sitting in this car, and she had a real little compact car, and she's eating hot wings while she's driving. Now, I mean, I think Taco Bell's responsible for so many car crashes, it's not even funny. And I can tell by everybody that laughed that you've been that same person where you're like, oh, my bean burrito. Oh, no. Right? Who hasn't done that? But this lady's eating hot wings, and I think that's a driving miracle. That's like stunt driving. So she pulls over, wrong lane of traffic, and she says, Hester, why are you always down here messing with black folks? And I said, I protect black children. That's my job. She's like, what's that supposed to mean? I said, well, a week ago, an 18-year-old guy was almost stomped to death by four other guys because they were rival drug dealers, and I'm always down here trying to make sure that doesn't happen. She said, why don't you go foot patrol in the white neighborhoods? And I said, you know what, ma'am? As soon as they start having shootings like that down there, I'll go. But until then, I feel like the black children in this neighborhood deserve my attention. And so, again, she's eating hot. She's like, you know what? I like that answer. You want a hot wing? So like a dummy. I say, well, yeah, I love hot wings. So now we're walking. I'm on the sidewalk. She's going the wrong way up Garth. I'm eating hot wings. She's eating a hot wing. She gives me another one. I don't know if you guys are like this, but when I eat them, it looks like Jurassic Park, and I get that stuff all over me, right? So now I'm covered, and they were hot, too. I don't know where she got them, but they were hot. So now I'm covered in hot wing sauce, and she ate her last one. She had that one little wet nap folding. So she's wiping her, and she's staring with her elbows. And so she wipes off. She's like, you know what? I never looked at it like that. You're all right. And then she drives off, and I'm like, like, what do I do? So I wiped them on the grass, finally, and my pants, you know. But that's kind of the hammer and the anvil I feel like that our police are in. I'll just submit that to you. You catch a cop doing the wrong thing, you report them. You report them to me, you call Chief Burton. We have an internal affairs division. You report them immediately. Make no excuses for bad police behavior. But when sometimes we get statistics and we're like, see, that's a bunch of, you know what? Look how many. There's several different levels to that. If a cop's wrong, he's wrong. If he's doing his job, he's doing his job. So the Black Crime Association, this is the science behind it. Our cops are less safe when they're going on stereotypes rather than the facts presented to them. What is this person doing? What's Brianna doing in front of me? What is she doing in front of me or that I have credible witnesses to tell me? Race should not even enter into that. If it is, bad news. Unless you know, somebody calls 911 and says there's a white guy in a gray ball cap sitting with a 357 Magnum. I mean, I shouldn't go to him, right? I should go to the guy in the gray ball cap who's white. I'll spit it out here in a minute. The science says that we, humans, have a black crime implicit bias. All of us, not just the cops. And that exposure to white male faces actually prevented the officers from taking the action they should have. I threw Mike and DC into this thing without any training, and we kind of saw it play out a little bit, but they did what they can. Okay, so now you guys are going to be participants because it's after lunch, and you know you're going to lose people after lunch unless you keep it exciting, so let's get rolling. When you see these pictures on the screen, if you think you would shoot that person as a police officer, you're now all police, you yell threat. If you wouldn't shoot them, just be quiet, right? So if you see, okay, I need to pull the trigger, I'm in danger, an innocent citizen's in danger, you yell threat. Now, these go fast, and you ain't seen fast till you go to the instructor school, so don't gripe at me if it's too fast. You guys ready? Here we go. You're now all cops. Make a split-second life or death decision. Anybody shoot? Okay, here we go.
Shoot. Three.
No. How many shots?
Two.
Okay, let's go backwards now. Anybody shoot him?
No.
Yes.
You actually shouldn't have any shots.
No.
Should be zero shots.
That's about how much time we would get on a great day. Because I can't move this clicker. A friend of mine is very critical of the police, but he's fun to talk to, so I talk to him. But he's always like, watch this video in slow motion. And, he'll show some guy, like, in super slow motion like they do on Football Sunday. And I'm like, life doesn't move in slow motion. It's kind of like the motorcycle lady picture we saw earlier. If I give you enough time, somebody made the point, well, we've had all this time to look at it. If I give you the time, of course you'll probably make the right decision. If I don't, and that's what our cops are in, you won't. Okay, so they did a similar study with the turban effect after 9/11. I won't spend a lot of time on it, but what they found was people were quicker to shoot someone who looked Muslim than not. And again, that's off all races. Then they did one with females. Officers were slower to shoot an armed female than they were a male.
They didn't really have a gun. Right. Or they just had it in their hand and not pointed or show that they're going to use it.
Okay, now, can you snap your fingers? Who? Can everybody hear snap? Okay, here's the deal. Watch this. Because that's a common thing. Oh, the gun wasn't even pointed at the officer. Okay, so now, everybody sit up, take a deep breath. I'm going to put you through a quick use of force training. This is my finger gun, right? Not a real gun, just my hand. I'm going to have it pointed straight down. When I start to raise it at you, I want you to snap, and that will be like you being a reactive police officer and shooting me before I shoot you. So the scenario is that I'm crazy, and my family called and said they don't know what's wrong with me. I'm usually normal. Yeah, right. But for some reason, I came home, I'm acting crazy, and I have a pistol, and they're scared because I already threatened to shoot everybody. So when I start to raise my gun at you, you be ready. Have your fingers ready. Now, we have to carry our guns at low ready, so maybe have your hand down here a little bit. But you just, well, no, here we go. You guys ready? You're all police officers here. Ready? Too late. Be ready. You're ready. Who wants to do it? Who's ready? Too late. All right, one more time. I'm crazy. I'm going to shoot. Okay, listen very carefully. You can't beat me. You cannot beat me. Action beats reaction. You cannot beat me. I don't care how well-intentioned you are, how fast you are. So sometimes when you see on the news that the police shot somebody who didn't have their gun pointed at someone, It could be that. Now, someone said taser or a less lethal option. I've been tasered. I can speak from experience. One of the probes hit me at the base of the neck, and the other one was on top of my left ankle, so I got the entire force of the taser. It hurt worse than anything in my whole life. For a taser to work, both of the probes have to hit you. So number one, you're counting on, would my taser darts connect? It shoots out like these little harpoon things, for lack of a better term. But so both of them has to hit, and the wires can't break, and the electricity has to flow through those wires and through a person. And so from the time you shoot it till they hit you is about 1 second before it all's going. Okay? So now count to one before I shoot you. You're going to be my taser operator. You ready? You see the problem? And I don't expect everybody to understand this or agree with it, but I will challenge you, if you guys want to come out and do some use of force scenario training sometime, maybe that'll be a funner class, shorter, promise, you'd be amazed at how slow you have to be. There's no requirement to be a police officer that you get killed or you get injured. Like the highway workers that pave the highway at 2 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon, we don't tell them, okay, we're going to pay you a pretty good salary in retirement, but, you know, if you get killed, I mean, there's no requirement like that for the police either. So we have to act. If our bias gets in the way, it's a problem. If we're trying to protect our life, it could also be a problem. This is not an easy answer one. This is not a binary choice. It's difficult. I'm not excusing people who shoot unarmed black people. I'm not excusing people who shot when they shouldn't have shot. I'm saying that not every police shooting is maybe one of those. Hold on 1 second. So race crime implicit bias is linked to officer effectiveness. If we overlook at people of color, if we overly interpret ambiguous behavior as more threatening, like the shove study, would you guys agree that we're probably going to over-respond? That's why we teach our officers you might have a bias. I grew up in a fascinating home life. So I'll be honest with you, I think one of the differences sometimes between white families and black families is talking louder. You know, have you ever met someone? I have a friend who's Egyptian, and he has to be this close to you to talk. Like in America, we have personal space, right? There's intimate space, personal space. But this guy is from Egypt, and he must be within 3 inches of you to tell you, like, hey, how are you doing? So it's kind of unnerving. It's not in my experience, right? It's different. Some stereotypes are true. Be courageous, follow me on this, and then you guys can throw something heavy at me. Some stereotypes are true. A, lower income people are disproportionately, which means there's more than should be, represented among people who commit street crimes. That's the FBI data. That's the crime report, that black people are overly, people of color are overly represented in street crimes. And by street crimes, I'm talking about robbery, assault, some of the shootings. Part B of that is people of color are overly or disproportionately represented in lower income. What the danger is, well, or is people of color are disproportionately represented among people who commit street crimes. That's partly based on data. Well, it's all based on data. But what does it mean as a human being? We don't want our cops going out there thinking, oh, this is a black guy, he's poor, he must be involved in crime. That would be wrong policing, we all know it. If you know a cop doing it, please report it. It doesn't justify a police officer being decisive based on that seemingly logical equation. I mean, and that's one that causes a lot of people discomfort and anguish. And you know, if you're making a decision because somebody fits A plus B plus C, then you're wrong. You know, it's unsafe, ineffective, unjust. This video we're about to watch kind of addresses that. So what I tell our cops is be safe, be effective, be just, right? Be just. what I suggested to you is if we could pull the last 10 years of shootings in Columbia, Missouri, not police shooting people, but we can pull those two, or 20 years. Who did the victim say shot them, and who was, in fact, the suspect? And it's aggravating. This next video clip has some curse words in it. They're going to block this out on the City Channel. It's from a movie. The movie is Crash. I think it was made 2003, 2004. We're that old. Oh, sorry. You know what? That was a chance for me. That was a chance for me to be empathetic and listen. You know me too well. I just had to be me there. So there is some cussing here. I just want to let everybody know. And the reason we show this video is it demonstrates. Sometimes I get kickback or feedback from officers saying, well, but we're supposed to stop crime. And you're calling me a racist if I do this. Kind of like the conversation I had with that lady driving up Garth. This is Hollywood, but let's see. Oops. Apparently I can't type all of a sudden. There we go. If you're offended by foul language, if you want to step out in the lobby, I'll come get you when it's done. It's a rated R movie. I just want to give everybody a chance to get off the hook here, okay? Just in that video, her bias came true. Like she grabs her man, remember when they're walking up the street? And they're having that discussion. Like, why? We should be scared. And I think the reason that the creator of this content put that in there, and I've talked to her about it, is it demonstrates kind of a lot of different sides of the argument, not all sides of the argument, but kind of where we all are with this. Like, I want to be a good cop. I'm a white cop. I want to be a good white cop. I have friends who tell me that they've been stopped for driving while black. I have friends who tell me that when they go to the mall, the security officer follows them around. that. I don't know if you guys know anybody that has similar stories. But what just happened there was her bias came true. So then, experientially, what's she going to do the next time? In later scenes in the movie, they have the locks change on the house, if you remember that far back. And it's a Hispanic guy changing the locks, and she's berating her husband because she's like, well, he's going to give our keys to his friends, and they're going to come back and rob our house now. Because now she's convinced that people of color are going to assault or hurt her. And just to be courageous and brave and trying to be part of the solution, all of us sometimes pack around those bags to everything we go to. Like, before I look at this man, let me put up this screen to look at him through. He looks like the guy who stole my dad's fishing boat. And when we do that, we all lose. So, a lot of people say, I'm colorblind. I don't see color. I'm not biased. And I'm talking about everybody. White people, black people. Yes, you are. There's scientific research to prove it. So, what are we doing? What is the Columbia Police Department doing? What I've tried to do is lay out a case here for you that bias is a human condition or affliction. I've tried to use some things to demonstrate to you and maybe allow you in your own head to say, I'd feel the same way, I'd feel different, I feel worse, I feel better. What I invite you to do is to join us in how we fix it from here. Not ignore everything that's ever gone wrong, but from here forward. And that's not dismissing the wrongs that have been done. It's taking accountability for my part and your part. The contact theory. So scientists say there's a contact theory. When you hang out with somebody, you start thinking, oh, they're just like me. I grew up in a rural town. I grew up eating fried chicken, fried fish, basically everything on the menu that's good at Cracker Barrel. That's what I grew up eating. So when I first started the Sheriff's Department, I had a country accent. I don't know if I still do or not. It's better, I think. But I remember some of the white deputies saying, oh, you're going to cause us problems because you sound too country. I'm like, what's that have to do with anything? They're like, well, because, you know, race relations. I'm like, well, I haven't treated anybody bad. That might have been their bias poking his periscope up, maybe. I don't know. But I treat everybody the way I want to be treated. I've always volunteered for neighborhoods that need more attention. No offense to anybody in the room, but I didn't sign on to be a police officer to protect the rich folks that live down in the Highlands. And if you live in the Highlands, please forgive me. I'll come protect you if you call. But I don't think I need to invest my resources down here because your kids are not walking out to a school bus stop where there's somebody with a gun or drug dealing or drug paraphernalia on the ground like needles and crack pipes, or somebody dropped an eight ball of crack and it's on the ground. You might pick it up on your way to school innocently or not innocently. Or your mom may not be high. I'm not saying there's not crime that doesn't go on in the Highlands, because there absolutely is. I'm convinced of it. But I'm saying the kids that are in danger in my community primarily live in different neighborhoods than the rich folk neighborhood. If you're rich, be mad at me or forgive me. I don't care. So when I took my little country accent down and started policing a neighborhood, I'd walk in, I'd be like, oh, somebody's frying chicken. Because what's the stereotype? Stereotype of redneck white people is we eat a lot of fried chicken and fried fish. Stereotype of black folks is? Anybody? So when I'd be like, oh, somebody's frying chicken. I had instant friends. I can't tell you how many police calls I've handled, and I hate to sound like I eat my way through my career, but I'm standing there like, who took your car? And somebody be telling me, mm-mm, that's not good. It's a good chicken, though. So I can't tell you how many meals I've enjoyed and broke bread with people, and they said, you know what, you're all right. Because I'm like them. I'm a person. I allowed my humanity to outrun my uniform. And that's the art of policing. Not every cop is that good at it, okay? I'm not the best. I'm pretty good at it, but not every cop is. And just like not every citizen would invite me in and share their meal with me. I've never had a meal in the Highlands. Draw your own conclusions, right? Whatever that means. I don't know what it means. Ain't nobody from the Highlands ever said, We're having tilapia tonight. Would you like some pilaf? But I've gone down. The contact theory. Two of my law enforcement heroes, all right? Andy Griffith. Okay, he had it figured out way back in the day. He knew his community. He had contact with them. He treated everybody like a human being. Sometimes he arrested them when they broke the law, but more often than not, he tried to divert them from the jail cell to a better place. Remember that? It's an old show, and it's black and white, and it's, you know, it's old, but he really had a pretty good thing going there. I really dig it. What's that? Right. Yeah, Otis, he trusted one member of his community to police himself. You know, Otis the town drunk would walk in and be like, well, I'm... There's times I wish I had someone that would let me be Otis. You know, like, hey, I just need to be, you know, just for a little bit. But, I mean, that's a pretty good theory. So Perush and Plant, and I told you, everybody that studies psychology and police has weird names, and maybe those aren't weird. If anybody here is named Perush, I apologize. If they put cops on a shoot-don't-shoot simulator. Now, we had one for the police department. It's in Mothballs right now. But it's like a big video game, like an Xbox, but, you know, on a full-size screen. And then you give the officer a real pistol. It looks just like what we carry on duty. And it shoots a laser beam out. And whoever the instructor is can change the way the scenario ends. So, like you might walk in and say, put your hands up. And if that's a reasonable command, the instructor can hit a button where the person puts their hands up. And if the officer doesn't, like, stand behind cover, or if the officer is not paying attention, the instructor can hit another button that'll make somebody, you know, draw a gun and shoot them. So what they suggested was, when you put cops on that, this is crazy talk, I know, make some of the bad guys women. Remember, we talked about the male-female bias. Make some of the bad guys white men. Make some of the bad guys black men. Make some of the bad guys old. Make some of the bad guys young. You see what they're doing there. Instead of it just being to go in and repeat what we saw in the movie Training Day or whatever movie you've watched, dating myself again there, how about we don't really know who the threat is? Now, that sounds dangerous to citizenry because you're like, oh, you want all your cops to be paranoid about everybody. No. I want my cops to be fair, impartial, and safe. And I want them to assess what do I need to do based on what's in front of them, not what's on top of them in the back of their mind. Because that will get them killed or make them biased police. Let's see. I'm not running for office. That's a good question. Her question was, why has that been mothballed? Like I said earlier, we started today with 8 police officers for the whole city working.
For community outreach,
you mean? No. For police, for patrol. Like the standard, I don't know who said, but like the standard, if you call 911, who you would expect to show up, right? We have almost as many officers in this room as we do out on patrol right now. And so what happens is we say, well, do we want people to come in on their day off? Well, then you either have to give them money or you have to give them another day off. And we're so far below staffing, like an acceptable level, that we can't afford to give more people off. And I'm just speaking bluntly, and I said that in front of the chief, so don't call the chief and say, I caught Hester I'm not bad-mouthing the chief or the city. I'm saying that's the resource stretch that we have, and we don't enjoy it either. It's a great training tool. We need to be using it for just what Perush and LaPlante found to decrease the chances that instead of, you know, okay, I've been in a gun call before, sometimes it was a white guy, sometimes it was a Hispanic guy, sometimes it was a black guy, sometimes it was an older white man, sometimes it was a younger white man. That way your brains, remember the wavy lines thing for the crime association? Those people were faster at everything, right? At least when they were accurate. That's what we want. It's not the cop's choice. A long answer. I apologize. Yes, Tracy?
I just want to say, even though you said this is about, you know, implicit bias and all that, but the truth of the matter is resources matter, right? Resources matter. Your ability to take advantage of resources to be better police is incumbent upon having adequate financing and adequate resources. So I'm just going to say that, but that's really important.
Thank you.
Even though you said we're not going to talk about that, all of these tools that you're able to use or should use, require resources. So.
Yes, thank you. Good. Well put. I mean, that's where we're at. So, cops with a boy. Let's see if I can pull this up real quick, because my one on the PowerPoint went away. I lost it. All right, let's go back to this. I'll show this video right after break. We're going to take a real quick break, because I know I've kept you in. Exposure to counter stereotypes. You know, so part of what we do to fix it, okay, so we've laid out the case, the science, that part of what we're doing to fix it is exposure to counter stereotypes. Part of it is that simulator. Part of it is we sit down and talk. You know, lots of people in this room have either invited me to a coffee or I've sat down with them or we've met at a community meeting. And I always walk away going, it's not a we, they thing. Like, that's why I wanted to put on this training for the whole citizenry. I don't want to convince you that the cops are right. I hope I haven't said that. I'm just saying we're human. And maybe if we get past that hurdle, the next one we can just fly over, you know? Counter stereotypes. So, you know, shoot, don't shoot simulators. They let civilian kids do it. They let army men and they let police officers do it. And what they found out was, after you're exposed to counter stereotypes, maybe you do a little better. The police and the civilians exhibited racial bias. So if people say, what about all these police shootings, I'll only give you this caveat. C.J. Parker shot 3 African-American people just outside of town, and then when the cops tried to pull him over 5 minutes later, he shot at the officers, and then they shot him. Everybody follow me on the scenario? He killed 3 black people, he shot at an officer, and then he was killed. He was a black man. That's a police shooting a black man. Walter Scott, the guy that was pulled over for just a taillight, and he ran from the officer, and the officer shot him in the back, that's a murder. Okay? Now, we can mince legal terms, you know, justifiable homicide. But it's 2 different scenarios. This C.J. Parker did kill 3 black people and tried to kill a cop. Walter Scott was running away. There's no reason in the world for that cop to shoot him. But sometimes when things get reported in the news, they're like, and another shooting of a black male. Well, which another? Another C.J. Parker type guy or another Walter Scott type guy? And I don't excuse bad behavior. In these studies, both the police and the civilians, black and white, exhibited robust racial bias. The cops actually did better. I hope that makes people feel better since what I just said. But that was after high-quality role play on one of these simulators we're talking about, right? The black, white, rich, old, young, male, female. Once we put our cops through that, they do such a better job of a guy jumps out on a car stop, what do I do? So let's take a 7-minute break. If you guys come back at 2:32, I'll get us out of here early. I don't know if anybody has to potty. I drink a lot of water.
respect to it.
Seeing him there, hiding in the shadows, why can't he go catch some real criminals, you may be thinking? Or no wonder he has a record number of complaints. Who wouldn't complain about a guy whose sole purpose in life is to ruin your day?
We're around the corner.
By the very nature of the business, all LA County traffic cops can expect to get at least a few complaints every year. A lot of them are petty, people just mad because they got a ticket. But regardless, they all get documented and placed in the officer's personnel file. Which is why Captain Pat Maxwell was stunned when he started looking through Simmons' file.
I just said that's not possible.
Although he did see lots of commendations, looking back over the last 20 years, over the last 25,000 traffic stops, Captain Maxwell couldn't find one complaint. A record, zero.
I mean, Vegas or MIT could not give you the odds with the statistical probability of that.
Obviously, Elton is doing something right.
It's got to be something.
Do you know what it is?
No.
No idea.
No.
Until the captain told him, Elton didn't even know he had such a record, let alone how he got it.
It's just how I do it every day.
So we trailed him for a day to see if we could figure out how he does it.
Yeah, what's going on? How you doing today, man?
First thing I noticed was that he has this pitch-perfect mix of authority...
So I need you to take care of that.
...and diplomacy.
I don't want to keep pulling you over, though.
...with none of the attitude that sometimes comes with a cop.
Sorry. That's okay. That's good. Just be careful, all right? I'm here with you. I'm not... up here, because one thing I hate is to be looked down at. I can't stand it, so I'm not going to look down at you.
That's why, in lieu of a lecture, he gives most people the benefit of the doubt.
So, it happens.
Of course, they still get the ticket.
It happens.
Just not the guilt trip. And drivers seem to appreciate that.
You know, it's not that bad.
So much so that by the end, some are downright smitten.
You know what it is? It's his smile.
Really?
He's got a great smile.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You're giggling now. Yeah, you just got a ticket.
I just got a ticket. He's a nice guy. I mean, you know, how can you be mad at that guy?
Apparently, you can't.
Disarming.
That's it, disarming.
Time after time.
Very kind.
Ticket after ticket.
Never so happy to get a ticket in my life.
We saw Officer Elton Simmons melt away a polar ice cap of preconceptions. And his boss says there's a lesson in there for hard-nosed traffic cops everywhere.
Yes. Okay. Their excuse is, well, I give tickets all day long. I'm going to get complaints. Well, that's not true.
There's a way.
There is a way to do it. And Elton Simmons is the way.
Certainly, no complaints here. Steve Hartman, on the road in Los Angeles.
There's a guy there. I mean, we would hope all our cops would act like that. Seems like a pretty good deal, you know? So locally, not necessarily locally, but a little closer to home, Chip Huth is... SWAT cop in Kansas City, Missouri. He works with a street narcotics unit, which they go after violent drug dealers, and that's their job. I show this video to our officers in training because it kind of ties everything we've talked about together today. Kip explains where he came from where he is today. And talk about fostering a mindset.
Let's suppose that you're writing a really important email to a colleague.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Chip Huth, and I've been a law enforcement officer for the past 24 years. And for most of that time, I have police problems, not people. As we're all aware, law enforcement has come under deep scrutiny in the wake of recent significant events in our country. Some of these high-profile events have contributed to a lack of trust in the police on the part of many community members. And for most of my career, I've been part of that problem. But over the last several years in Kansas City, we've been on a journey. A journey learning to apply new ways of policing that have been transformational, particularly for me and the members of my team. With the real urgency to find solutions to our biggest problems, I want to share how this transformation occurred for us and what it has meant in Kansas City. I'm here because I know what has happened with us can happen anywhere. When I first became a SWAT team member, our city's West Side community was deeply burdened with high volume crime. Many businesses had relocated and the streets resembled open sewers. Most of the criminals blended in with groups of undocumented workers and preyed on them and other citizens who were too fearful to cooperate with the police. At one point, our SWAT team was brought in with a mandate to clean it up. We adopted a zero-tolerance policy toward crime of any kind, but the situation continued to decline. We policed the neighborhood heavily. We wrote tickets and made arrests for any violation we observed, no matter how minor. We were fishing with a net instead of a spear, and many hard-working community members got caught up in the sweeps meant to discourage the criminals. Despite our work, the crime rate increased, and because of our work, some community members began to see us as the enemy. I remember one critical thinking officer approaching me and asking, "Chip, you do realize what we're doing isn't working, right?" To which I replied, "Yes, of course I realize it isn't working, but we're the police, and this is what we do." It was my narrow-mindedness that invited community members to complain more and cooperate less. A few years later, I was promoted and had the opportunity to lead a SWAT team of my own. I brought the same mindset I had employed on the West Side with me, and it wasn't long before that team was one of the most complained upon units in the entire department. I was equal parts blind to the needs of the community and the potential of my team. It was in the middle of all this that we encountered the ideas of the Arbinger Institute. Through a partnership with the Institute and our Leadership Academy, we began to ask a question. Do we really see the people we're policing as people? As we started to ask ourselves this question, our team members started to consider what it might be like to be policed by us. As our collective mindset began to shift, so did our results. Let me illustrate with a few quick stories. Our team encounters many aggressive dogs during search warrant service operations. Aggressive dogs pose obvious dangers to the team, and the primary way for the team to address them was to shoot them. This made the owners of the animals predictably angry and sad. Relating to the dog owners, one squad member asked this question of our team. He said, "What if we could serve a warrant on your house without shooting your dog? Would you want us to?" Well, many of the team members are pet owners, so you can imagine what the answer was. This one question led us to embed a dog expert with our team to learn our jobs and to teach us about dog behavior. We also implemented additional technology to capture and restrain aggressive animals. This initiative to date has resulted in an 80% reduction in dogs being shot on search warrant executions in Kansas City, Missouri. Our team utilizes patrol wagons to escort suspects to jail. These wagons are essentially vans that have been converted to haul prisoners. A couple of officers were operating these wagons, noticed that people were complaining about the excessive heat in the summer months. As a result, they were often angry and unruly, and when they got to jail, they caused disturbances with the detention people. The wagon drivers listened to the complaints of these folks, and they actually did an investigation themselves. They took it upon themselves to look into this. They discovered the cabins of the patrol wagons could heat up to dangerous levels on some days. But because of the modifications made to the vehicle, cool air could not be effectively pumped into the prisoner compartment. These officers went to the local hardware store and purchased PVC pipe and duct tape with money out of their own wallets. They used the duct tape to attach one end of the PVC pipe to the air conditioner vents in the driver's compartment, ran the other end of the pipe through the metal mesh into the back of the prisoner's compartment. This made it possible to push cool air into the back of the wagon, providing relief from the heat to the suspects as they were being transported to the detention facility. As we started to see people we were policing more and more as people who mattered the way we mattered, it began to affect what we did as we responded to unique situations in ways we could not have conceived of when we were operating from an inward mindset. One summer day, our team chased a violent fugitive into an apartment complex. The man hid in the ceiling of one of the apartments, requiring us to evacuate the entire building. One family was in the middle of making dinner, and in their rush to get to safety, they weren't able to turn off the stove. Once the building was evacuated, we were able to enter the ceiling space and capture the suspect without endangering the residents. A detective assigned to our team noticed the ruined dinner on the family stove. He took inventory of everything that was wasted and left the scene as we began the process of letting folks back into their homes. About 30 minutes later, that detective returned with an armful of groceries, which he delivered to the family whose dinner was ruined. The detective had used his personal credit card to replace every single item on the family's dinner menu. One day we were asked by the homicide unit to serve a warrant on a house looking for a couple of murder suspects. We did our homework on the residents, I briefed the team, and we rolled out. As we made the block, we were immediately compromised by lookouts. Our breacher took the front door off the hinges with a battering ram, and we made our way into the living room. What we encountered on the other side of that door was complete pandemonium. There were approximately 25 people with small children and infants in the home. Toddlers were literally clinging to our legs as we made our way through the house. There were minutes of chaos as we rounded everybody up and consolidated them into a dining room that had been furnished with three couches. I tried to address the group, however, with several small children screaming and mothers frantically trying to calm them, the best I could do was try to go from person to person to explain why we were there. It was about that time I noticed that my point man was missing. I decided I was going to try to find him. I imagined he had found some quiet place somewhere in the house to call the detectives. I walked into the kitchen, and there he was, in full tactical gear, standing at the sink, mixing baby bottles. He just looked at me and smiled and kind of shrugged, and he went out to the dining room and began distributing the baby bottles to the mothers of the crying infants. This one act of responsiveness changed the entire scene. Everyone calmed down, and we were able to explain the situation thoroughly and turn the two suspects over to the detective smoothly, all because this officer was able to be responsive in a stressful situation. No behavioral mandate, new policy, or technology prescription can change the way we see others. Nor can these sterile measures equip officers with the ability to adapt in the moment to provide the approach each unique situation requires. The change in the way we see can not only transform a single situation, but can transform an entire community. Let me take you back to the West Side, where two officers there began to see people as people. After we had abandoned the zero tolerance policies on the West Side, the main responsibility for policing the community fell to two officers. These officers engaged community leaders with humility and an open mind. They abandoned positions and focused on the shared interests of the neighborhood and the police department. They began by acknowledging the personhood of each member of the community. They saw them as people who counted. This shift in mindset opened up possibilities never before considered. They worked to build trust with all community members. They began to differentiate between the day laborers who wanted to work and those who hid among them that were responsible for the majority of the crime in the neighborhood. These officers helped devise a system where the men seeking work had to report to a community center, where they were issued ID cards and provided with food, coffee, restroom facilities, and a place to shower. Those who weren't picked up for work on a given day were dispatched out into the community to perform neighborhood services. These two officers worked right alongside of them, clearing brush, painting houses, and even helping neighborhood matriarchs make tamales, all the while building critical relationships that were leveraged to help instill security, safety, and prosperity back into the community. The criminals with ill intent became easy to identify, and the community began willingly cooperating with the efforts to reduce crime and disorder as their fear of the police dissipated. These two officers worked with the community members and fellow officers to drive the crime rate to an all-time low and achieve a national success story that was made possible by a mindset shift that allowed them to see those in the community as people with individual hopes, needs, fears, and dreams. A bank, restaurants, and other neighborhoods and other businesses move back into the neighborhood, and the community is engaged and supportive of the police. We are facing a huge challenge, and we must face it together. The solution is simple: changing our mindset more than mandating new behaviors, deploying new technologies, or implementing new policies is what is needed. This mindset shift helped our SWAT team capture more illegal drugs and guns in a three-year period than we had in the previous decade, while at the same time transforming from the most complained-on unit in the department to receiving zero community complaints in 6 years. Just to recap, that represents a threefold increase in productivity and a 100% reduction in community complaints. Believe me, if we can do it, anyone can. Thank you very much for the gift of your time.
Isn't that cool or what? So I show that to our officers, and I tell you, they're riveted. Talk to me, Goose. You back? All right. Our controlled behaviors override our bias, so we're going to go through that. Meehan and Ponder, psychological investigators with strange names, unless you're Meehans. You know, they found out that cops are more likely to run warrant checks on African Americans than white people. That's bias rearing its ugly head. Thing is, and somebody said this earlier, you might be letting white people get away with a crime. They had more success. They would be more likely to find a warrant on the white guys. And so statistically, if you want to be a winner, you should have run more white guys. Bias leads you the wrong way. We have gut reactions. When I was new, they said, trust your gut. If your gut tells you this, do that. Well, that's great, except your gut might lead you the wrong way. One of my roommates was a lesbian, and I told a friend of mine about that. And they said, can you trust her around kids? Well, this woman does more charity. This woman provides for more kids than probably anybody I know. And I know a lot of good people in this community that, you know, break their backs helping the kids in this community. This woman has done more in a month than most good people do in 5 years. You know, my gut tells me she's good. Their gut told them to watch out. I mean, it's what I've seen. We tell our cops to rely on facts, intelligence, and information. And intelligence could be if he calls me and says, there's a white guy in a gray hat in the front of the room with a gun. That's intelligence information. Doesn't mean it's a fact, but it probably means I better take a second look, right? It's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. We try to teach our cops to look at what's in front of them and to gather information. Remember we talked about ambiguous stimuli? Like if I walk up to your door at 3 a.m. and I knock on the door and I keep my hand this way and I'm not really looking at you, you should be suspicious. That's good. If it's ambiguous, you don't know that I have a gun or a knife, but you should be suspicious. You'd be a fool not to. If you run into an ambiguous stimuli like that, slow it down. Maybe keep the door shut. Maybe say, hey, I've called the police. How can I help you? Right? Through the locked door. Don't be like my mom and call me, all right? My mom, bless her heart. Well, this guy needed a ride, and he didn't have any money, so he said he just needed $20. And she gave an address where it's a known crack house, to be honest with you. And she's like, so he said he had to visit family there, so I drove him there, let him off. I'm like, Mom, no. She's like, well, he was very nice. Well, I bet he was, you know. But you know, at a certain age, we don't think things are ambiguous. And if something is ambiguous, slow it down. I remember the Susan Boyle video we watched. A lot of people, when they first see that, and myself included, I thought they're just going to make fun of this poor woman who just wants her shot because she doesn't look like Britney Spears or whoever. I'm showing how old I am, I guess. But don't let that happen. Don't assume things. You know, some of our officers have even less hair than I do. And I can't tell you how many times we'll go somewhere, and it's Officer Scott Linger, great cop. But they'll say, oh, he's one of those racist skinhead cops. Well, he's bald. I mean, you know, not a lot of ways to cut that hair. No offense, not that I'm that far behind you. But it doesn't mean that I prescribe to some moron that says, hey, let's burn a cross in some of your yard, show that we're intelligent. You know, it doesn't equate. It's not the same thing. His hair fell out. We shouldn't make fun of him. Profiling by proxy. You know, that's assuming that somebody said it earlier, birds of a feather flock together. My grandma told me that, and I think grandma was right in a way, right? But let's say, heaven forbid, that we find out one of the Columbia cops is a no-good, duty-head, racist cop. That's him. That ain't me. The teacher who raped someone that I know was that teacher. It wasn't teachers. Right? I mean, we can't just start throwing these wide brushes. Is my action legal, ethical, or moral? Am I looking at this from a vision of justice? Am I applying the law? Am I looking at the facts in front of me? That's fair and impartial policing. That's what we have encouraged our Columbia police officers to do. And it really is more effective. Someone said earlier that if you tell a cop a story, that he believes your story. I remember a sexual assault investigation I was involved in, and I believed the woman. And so I wrote my report, and one of our detectives, a female detective, said, this sounds like a bunch of crap to me. I said, no, I really believe her. I really believe her. And turns out she was telling the truth. I mean, the guy, as she described him, I mean, very particular, not like a white male, bald spot, devilishly handsome. I mean, but she described the suspect very particularly. He did that to someone else. But that detective's bias said, oh, no, here we go again. No, we can't do that. We have to be fair and impartial with every citizen every time. What I'll challenge you guys to do, because now you're going to go out of here, and I hope you will invite me and allow me to participate with you in your journey. Some people have different causes in this room. My cause as the community outreach unit supervisor is to reconnect citizens with good policing. And so I would love it if you'll invite me. I'll invite you guys. I don't want this to end. I've made some bridges with some folks. I've made some partnerships, formal and informal. There's people I can call at 2 in the morning to help me out. You know, phone a friend. You know, hey, it's me, the police, and something weird's going on here. Can you help? And we have such great mental health resources, educators. I mean, we have people in this town that are willing at the drop, at one phone call, to come help us. I want to be part of that. But I want you to look inside yourself if you have a bias. I want you to consider the viewpoint of other people. I challenge our police officers to consider the viewpoint of the person you're dealing with and try to see it from their eyes. When we started, remember, we wrote, you know, what do we want the police to do when they show up? And that's what we want. I still want all these things. I agree with everything we wrote up there. Make your decision based on the law. You know, the ambiguous stimuli, I will ask you guys as citizens, I'll beg you, please, when you hear or see bad police behavior, to report it. Don't ever think you're doing us a favor by saying, oh, I'll let that go. Please report it every time. Our profession can't afford stinkers. I will also say I'm proud of the men and women of the Columbia Police Department, the Boone County Sheriff's Department, and the Missouri State Highway Patrol in this area. I think we have some courageous and competent law enforcement officers who hang it all out there. Right? Like they're, I could walk out of here and be shot because somebody recognizes me as a cop, and I don't expect anybody to like be like, oh, that makes everything okay. It doesn't make everything okay, but it is a stress we face. The contact theory. I'm trying to engage with the community. One of the news reporters, actually all of them, said, why do you want to give this training to the citizens? And I said, I want to ruin everybody's Saturday. Kidding. I said, I want them to see what we tell our cops. I want them to experience firsthand, these are the steps we're taking. And to some of you, I think you're like, wow, that's awesome. And to some of you, I think you're saying, this sucks. And that's okay. On Wednesday, November 9th, 4 days from now, the Civilian Review Board has graciously agreed to share this room because they have a meeting and they have a an agenda of things they meet with. When that meeting is over, they're going to allow us to share their space. And I would like at that time to have feedback, questions, complaints, clarifications, suggestions, and continue this conversation. Like, I don't want this to be a one-time, I don't expect you guys to come sit and listen to me for 4 hours every weekend. But if we can kind of start working together, we could probably make things better together. And I just believe that to be true. That's what I've dedicated my life to. And I know some in this room have spent an enormous amount of energy to the same and similar things. So if anybody can come Wednesday, go ahead. Oh, yeah.
It's still in discussion. We're working to try and share the space with them at the Citizens Police Review Board Wednesday night. Their meeting does start at 7 p.m. And so what I will do is make sure that we're sending out press releases and updates on our website and social media sites on whether or not that is confirmed. If it changes, I will also let you guys know.
So ours would be after theirs?
Actually, our chief of police is giving a presentation during that particular meeting. And so we would kind of incorporate into that if it's a potential that we can use that space. So we're still waiting to get confirmation. So if you're wanting to be a part of that, CPRB has invited you to come to that meeting. And then, like I said, if it changes, I will let you know in advance that we'll be scheduling on a different day then.
So, and she's a public information officer for the police department, Brianna Maupin. See her after this, and if you need to know how to get signed up to make sure, or where to look, we're on Facebook, Twitter, through the media, YouTube. I mean, I don't know. She's get with her. All right, she's got it. If you catch a cop doing the right thing, a simple thanks, or call me and let me know. If you catch him doing the wrong thing, report it. But I'm telling you, the men and women of this department, these agencies around here, they're not perfect people. They are human to the core, and they will mess up. But there is a difference between a mess up that should cost you your career and a mess up that the chief calls you to his office, I'm just saying hypothetically, and says you can't ever do that again. Okay? So I appreciate your all's attention. That's all the material I have for today. I'll be around if you guys want to hang out and talk. I'd love it if everybody checked back in Wednesday on the 9th, get some feedback, a little more feedback. I mean, I'll hang out as long as you guys want. I'm just saying this is all I have, so I appreciate your time today. So thank you. Thank you.